See this? I'll always love you.
Welcome, everyone, to Xena and Uber's podcast, a.k.a. XNU. My name is Cass, and I will be your pod host. Also, welcome back to those of you who have been following this podcast. So far, we are now up to episode number 176. This podcast show is for all the Xena and Uber subtext stories that are out there that have not been given a voice. The song snippet for this week's show is a Lucy Lawless song snippet sent in to us by Cynthia. Thank you, Cynthia, for sending us that in. It's Lucy Lawless singing Footloose with Kenny Loggins a few years back. So thank you, Cynthia, for that. All right. The book recommendation for this week's show is called Pirate's Heart by Catherine Friend. And I'll have a link on my show notes for you, of course, to go and see it. And the description goes like this. Four women, a long-lost treasure, and more than one thief of hearts share destiny beyond time. To foil a map thief, librarian Emma Boyd searches for a pirate's long-lost treasure map. She's aided in her search by investigator Randy Marks, who proves to be as frustrating as she is beautiful. The treasure map Emma and Randy seek belong to Thomasina Farris, a pirate who disappeared from the Caribbean in 1715. Did Captain Tommy steal an entire treasure from a Spanish galleon and escape? Was she convicted of piracy and hanged by her neck? Did she die of a broken heart when she lost a woman she loved? In a race to find the map, Emma learns that pirates not only steal treasure, but they also steal hearts. When Emma discovers Captain Tommy's fate, she must decide her own as well, choosing between romance or revenge. So once again, that's A Pirate's Heart by Catherine Friend, and I'll have a link on my show notes where you can go there and read an excerpt on the book.
Initializing process. Oh, crap.
Well, what's going on the World Wide Web? Well, over at AUSXIP, Mary Dees put up on her site that the Hub has canceled the Australia Xena Convention. It's found out that, unfortunately, Lucy cannot get her work schedule where she could be able to be in Australia. So instead of going ahead with the convention with Hudson and Danielle and the other guests, they decided to cancel the event. So that's very unfortunate. And also, thank you once again to Cynthia. She's also put on there that you do realize that the Xena Convention in 2012 will be the last one. So if you haven't had an opportunity to go there and get into a Xena Convention, this is your last year. This is your last opportunity. Unfortunately, I have never been able to attend one, and I was hoping for the one in Australia so that I wouldn't have to come back home and... Unfortunately, I'm not going to be able to make that one either. So please, if you have the opportunity, don't put it off. Obviously, go. It's in January 2012. You could go to Mary D's site or go to the official Lucy Lawless fan club site or go to Creation site and get the information and go there. Also, on the World Wide Web, Cynthia's also wanted to let you know that they are involved in a society of women engineers, and they encourage girls to pursue careers in engineering. And I'll have a link on my website where you can actually go to their site and get some information. So if you're just entering college or you're just thinking of changing career paths and want something new and exciting, go here, have a look, and think about it. It's something that's quite interesting, and maybe it's for you.
Well, if that is the worst thing that happens today, I'll be thrilled.
Well, in the continuing saga of the shipping fiasco that's going on in my life on this side of the planet, we have now found out that my items, which are still sitting down in the port, and even though we found them, that's a good thing, yay, we found them, and yay, it's all paid in regards to the shipping company so that they can release it. Well, unfortunately, there's more money to be released because now Customs and the Australian Quarantine Services want their fair share too. So Customs has graciously decided that because the item is not valued over $1,000, that they don't have to charge me. But Quarantine says, no, we want our share. So I have to now pay quarantine services for them to go in and fumigate, bomb, radiate, do whatever they want to do to these things so that I can get possession of them. And of course, then there is the finding of how to ship them from down in Sydney up to my neck of the woods. So it's getting more and more expensive, folks. It's all about money. And then to add to the saga, as you can hear, and I do apologize for the show in advance, that there will be times where my voice will crack, or it's going to get deeper, or it's just going to sound very congested. That's because I'm still struggling with a chest infection, strep throat kind of thing going on. But I promise to continue the show, because I'm not going to leave you out in the open right now, and get this rocking and rolling for you. So let's move on. The worst thing has happened. We're going to move forward. So we continue on with I Found My Heart in San Francisco, Book 1, Awakenings, Chapter 14, by Susan Mayer. Ryan finally turned to her and asked, "What do you think I should do about Tracy?" "Don't ask me that, please," she pleaded. "I want you to drop her like a hot rock and kiss me till I pass out." But she stoically quieted her inner conflict and responded thoughtfully, "Tell me how you feel about her." "I like her a lot," she replied confidently. "She's got all the attributes that I want in a woman. But there's one thing that really bothers me," she said. "What's that?" Jamie inquired. "I don't think she likes my family much," she said thoughtfully. "How could that be?" Jamie asked in true surprise. "You've got the nicest family on earth." "Obviously. She's always been complimentary. But she has very good manners, so I would expect that. She's from a wealthy family in Los Angeles." After a beat, she added, "No offense," with a little grin. "None taken," Jamie replied with a smile. "She doesn't speak badly about her own family. She just wouldn't do that. But I don't sense any real love there. She doesn't like to visit them, and she never mentions talking to them on the phone." She shook her head. "I just can't imagine that."
"God, Ryan, I just can't imagine not loving your family. I miss them when I haven't seen them for days," she laughed. "Maybe she just hasn't had enough time with them."
"No, that's not it. I had her over for dinner at least 6 times. After it became clear that I was trying to get close to her, Don encouraged me to have her over more often. She always said she had a nice time, but she always seemed to prefer getting me alone."
"I can see that would concern you. But maybe she wants to spend her time getting to know you. Maybe she thinks she'll have time later for the extended family,"
Jamie offered. "You may be right," she said slowly. "But I suggest that we take the baby for the day," and she was decidedly unenthusiastic.
"Well, that seems very odd. Caitlin is the most precious thing on earth. But again, maybe she just wants to be alone with you."
"Maybe," Ryan mused. "But when I talk about my desire to have children, she always changes the subject, or tries to distract me. The other day I asked her flat out if she wanted children, and she just laughed and said she hadn't spent much time thinking about it."
"Well, she is young," Jamie reminded her. "Lots of women don't make up their minds about that until they're in their 30s.
"True. And if you both agree, that's just fine. But I don't want to wait that long. Having kids is one of the biggest reasons that I want to be in a stable relationship. And I want to have them before I get terribly involved in my career. If Tracy and I are to be a couple, she has to be enthusiastic about having kids in the next couple of years. And I sure don't get the idea she's on the same wavelength."
"I guess you would have to be more blunt with her, Ryan. Tell her what your plans are and see if she's willing to share them. She might surprise you,"
she offered. "Well, there is one other thing," Ryan added somberly, "and it's the one thing that could be the deal breaker."
"What's that?"
"She doesn't believe in God,"
she said quietly. "Do you mean she's agnostic?" she inquired.
"Nope. She's a card-carrying atheist," she replied. "I don't think I ever considered that I would require Griffin to have some spiritual belief, but I think I do," she added thoughtfully. "It wouldn't even bother me if she was agnostic, you know. Like she didn't believe in God, but she allowed that there was a possibility of a God. But we've talked about this several times. She believes in nothing. No God, no creator, no karma, no afterlife. She thinks we're here by some cosmic accident, and she thinks every bit of our energy dies and is put in a box. She actually referred to spirituality as a fairy tale."
They were approaching the crest of the hill that led them back to the No Valley, and Jamie had to concentrate just to keep her breathing even. But the pause let her collect her thoughts for a moment. "I think I know what you mean, Ryan. My faith is so much part of my life. that I would hate not to be able to share it with someone I loved.
Exactly,
Ryan replied.
I mean, it's clear that I have issues, big issues with Catholic Church. I go back and forth between being really connected and really disconnected. I'm in a disconnected period right now, as a matter of fact. But my belief in God as the source of love and goodness and peace is unwavering. I just know if I can love someone who doesn't believe in what I trust to be a source of love.
She said with conviction. I get it, Ryan. I really do. I mean, I love to go to church. It's often the highlight of my week. But I could love someone who didn't go. I could love someone with an entirely different view of the world, like a Buddhist or a Hindu. But I would hate to have my lover think I was wasting my time or doing something foolish.
That is precisely the problem with Tracy. It's not just that she doesn't believe. I think she equates my faith with believing in, like, the Easter Bunny or Santa Claus. She seems to think it's kind of a cute little phase that I'll grow out of when I'm mature. I mean, I like her so much. But if I'm going to be committed to her, we have to have a similar moral framework. My faith and my family are so integral to me, it's almost like she can't know me if she can't understand and respect that.
It sounds to me like you've already made up your mind, Ryan, she observed.
Yeah, she glumly replied as she let out a breath. I suppose I have. I've just been trying to convince myself that it can work. I mean, it's hard to find everything you want in one person, and she seems so close.
She said emphatically as she held up her hand and spread a thumb and index finger just a tiny bit apart. What will you do?
I guess I could tell her I'm not interested in a committed relationship and see if she just wants to play around. She replied with a leer. Or I could just tell her I'm not ready to go any further and stop seeing her.
She gave a little scowl.
I don't like the option number two, but it's probably what I'll do.
I think you'll feel better about yourself if you do that, Ryan. Although you could tell her the total truth and see if she's open to changing her opinions.
She replied. I think the Spanish Inquisition showed that you can't force faith on someone, Jamie.
She teased. I don't mean that, Goofy. I mean, tell her the whole truth and see if she wants to just fool around for a while.
I'm not certain what I'll do. But I guess she deserves total honesty for putting up with me for almost 4 months.
That is a lot for one poor woman to bear.
She laughed in response.
Gosh, we're home already.
She said as she looked up and noticed they had turned on to know.
That went fast.
Yeah, it did. Ryan agreed. But time always flies when I'm with you. Jamie looked over at a grinning friend's guileless face and gave her hand a gentle squeeze.
You can say that again, pal.
Ryan let her smaller friend precede her as they climbed a short flight up the stairs to the front door. When they were nearly at the top, she leaned in close and whispered,
Just for the record, I've been on both ends of artificial penises. As Martha Stewart would say, it's a good thing.
When they went back downstairs, Jamie had to admit that she felt a lot better about her breakup now. She had a whole new topic, setting her teeth on edge.
Both ends? What in the hell does she mean by that?
She mused, unable to get the image of Ryan and artificial penises out of her mind. Ryan walked over to a bookshelf and pulled down a neatly labeled photo album. Oddly turning the pages, she found the photo she was looking for and called Jamie over. Turning the book and handing it over to her, she pointed to the photo in the center of the page without comment. Jamie barked out a laugh, slapping her hand over her mouth and staring up at Ryan in shock. There, memorialized for all to see, was the little street urchin that Ryan had described early in the evening.
My God!
She finally got out, now able to control her laughter.
Is this really you?
Ryan walked around to stand next to her friend. Taking the books in her hand, she smiled finally at the image of her young self and nodded briefly. The photo showed five little ragamuffins, all of similar age. They were all posing on Maeve's front steps, and each child tried to appear older and tougher for the camera. The other four were boys, but they were all dressed nearly identically. Ryan was in the front, standing on the ground in front of the stairs. She was so extraordinarily tall that she was the same height as the two boys standing on the stair behind her. Jamie guessed that she was rail thin, but it was very difficult to tell for sure because of laughingly large clothes. She had on a canvas barn jacket, tan in color, with a darker brown corduroy collar. The hood of a dark green sweatshirt peeked out past the collar, but the jacket was so huge she could have easily fit another sweatshirt on and still have had room. Stiff-looking dark blue jeans covered her long legs. The cuffs rolled up at least 5 inches. The pants were so large it was impossible to see where one leg started and the other stopped. It just looked like a big mass of fabric. She also sported flat, black, thick-soled tennis shoes that looked to be about a size 8. A black baseball cap rested on her long black hair in its usual backwards position. Her trusty skateboard was resting on its tail, held upright by her long, slender fingers.
every child bore a scowl with varying degrees of success. Ryan was probably the least successful of all. Her dainty blue eyes and microscopic smile gave her away. Jamie stared at the picture for so long that her eyes became dry.
"I don't think I've ever seen anything more precious," she finally said, looking up into Ryan's bemused eyes.
"Precious?" she squawked. "I look like a—I don't even know what I look like."
"You look just like a tiny little seed of who you have become," she said with a voice full of wonder. "Look at yourself," she urged excitedly. "You look so confident and strong. Those boys weren't leading that little group. You were. That's completely obvious," she announced. "And even though you were trying to look tough, you still have that terrible, gentle spirit, just oozing out of those blue eyes. See it?" she demanded.
Ryan gazed at the picture and then turned back to her friend. "Are we looking at the same picture? I just look like a little hoodlum."
"Not at all," Jamie cried. "I would have killed to be able to hang out with you just for a day. I bet you guys had more fun in an afternoon than I did in a year. This is what being a kid should be, Ryan," she cried. "Testing your own capabilities, learning to interact with other kids, trying to look outrageous. That's the essence of youth."
"I guess I see your point," she said slowly. "Dal let me test myself constantly when I was little. I don't think I ever got in trouble for trying something stupid. You only got mad when I did something that could hurt someone else, like taking over those handicapped ramps. He really let me be who I was, even though I'm sure he's constantly worried about me. That really was a gift." She reflected somberly. "I hope I can do the same for my kids."
Jamie wrapped her arm around her friend's sturdy waist. "You'll probably be more completely overprotective," she teased.
Maybe," she allowed reflectively, "but I don't think so. I want my kids to experience the freedom that I had. It's what it's allowed me to dream," she added with a small smile.
As they closed the book and replaced it on the shelf, she turned to her friend and announced,
"Now it's time for you to dream, pal. To bed with you." The walk, or a climb as she referred to it, had really relaxed Jamie as she felt ready to sleep. She went to the bathroom, put on her pajamas, and when she returned, she was pleasantly surprised to see a grinning Ryan sitting on the bed, holding a bottle of massage lotion. Jamie flung herself onto the bed, peeling her shirt up as she fell.
"I don't want to force you,"
Ryan teased. As her strong, cool hands began to work their magic, Jamie closed her eyes and silently wished that one day those hands would know her completely. The next few days were not pleasant ones for Jamie. Casey and Mia were shocked at the breakup, and had both insisted on a long recitation of the events leading up to it. Jamie was tired of talking about it, but after the whole story was out, Mia was very supportive. Casey was less so, but Jamie had a feeling that even she felt a little guilty about the whole role she played in that scenario. She decided to tell her parents in person. On Tuesday afternoon, she drove down to the peninsula, arriving just after her father had returned home. She never come down on a weekday, and when she thought about it, she had never come down unannounced. Her parents were obviously quite surprised to see her, and they both seemed a little anxious, so she immediately launched into the reason for her visit. She told them most of the story, omitting, of course, the role that Ryan had played. She talked more about the difficulty of being apart during the week, of Jack's intense schedule, and of her own doubts about her commitment. To her amazement, her parents were completely sympathetic. It was obvious that her father was saddened by the news, since he had grown quite fond of Jack. But she had tried her best to remove any animus towards Jack when she described the reasons for the breakup. They both seemed to agree that even though he was a young, wonderful man, Jamie was probably not really ready to make a permanent commitment. Catherine, in particular, seemed relieved that Jamie would not be tied down at so young an age. As she were leaving, her father walked her to the car.
"Was part of this because of your friend, Jamie?"
he asked with a touch of hesitation.
"Yes, Daddy, it was partly that," she admitted.
"Seems odd to me that Jack would be so bothered by that. But maybe that was just a sign that he wasn't ready either."
He reflected. "I'm so happy that your mother is so supportive of me, Daddy. I can't thank you enough," she said sincerely.
"I love you very much, Jamie. I've always been proud of you, and the way you've handled this makes me that much prouder,"
he said with a smile. "I want you to promise me that you won't treat Jack any differently, Daddy. I don't want this to interfere with his job opportunities."
"I don't mix business with emotions, honey. Jack will be a good lawyer and we'll be lucky to land him. Don't worry about that,"
he said as he kissed her cheek.
On Wednesday morning, Jamie sat in a long hallway, waiting for Linda Levy's office hours to begin. The professor came strolling down the hall and waved friendly greeting.
"Hi, Jamie," she said. "Sorry I couldn't see you earlier in the week. Come in and tell me what's on your mind." "I need a referral for a therapist, and I thought you might be able to refer me someone good," she related a bit hesitantly. "Sure.
I know a lot of therapists in the area. Would you feel comfortable telling me what types of issues you need to deal with? She asked. I'm just having some general growing up issues. I'm having a lot of trouble with my parents. She said as she stalled for time. And I think I might have some issues with my sexual orientation. She finally got out. Okay. I know a lot of people that could probably help you. Is cost a factor? No, not really. She admitted. Do you have a preference for any particular type of therapist? Like a psychiatrist or psychologist? No. I just want someone I can relate to, she said. Do you care if it's a woman or a man? She continued. I think I'd like a woman. She blushed as she heard her double entendre. Linda grinned back at her and looked through her address book, finally jotting down three different names. I'm going to refer you to a psychiatrist, a psychologist, and a clinical social worker. They're all good, and I think you would like each of them. You can set up an appointment with each if you like, to interview them, or just pick one. Do whatever feels comfortable, Jamie. Is there one of these women that you would recommend more highly than the others? I know the psychologist pretty well, so I would say I know her style the best. I suppose she would be my pick. Linda replied. Thanks a lot, Linda. I really appreciate your input. Anytime, Jamie. If you ever need to chat on a non-therapeutical basis, I'd be happy to. I hope things work out well for you. Jamie reached for the note, but Linda held onto it tightly, drawing Jamie's eyes to her. One piece of advice. She said quietly, you can never make a mistake by being who you really are, no matter how scary the truth might seem. Jamie nodded briefly and took the names from the professor. They shared a quick smile as Jamie left the office. On Tuesday evening, Ryan finished preparing the simple dinner that she and Connor were going to share. He finished setting the table and came back to the kitchen to help carry their plates into the dining room.
Boy, Tracy should look good on Sunday,
he said appreciatively.
She looks fabulous in that dark brown color. Should have her wear that color more often.
I don't think I have any input anymore. She said she'd carry the last of the dishes into the room. We broke up this afternoon.
What? I thought you were serious about her.
He stopped in the center of the room, a big plate of pasta held in one strong hand. I was, but I finally realized that she wasn't the one. So rather than wasting her time, I told her the truth.
How did she take it?
Yes, remembering some of his more disastrous breakups. Fine, actually. A little too fine. She admitted with a smirk. She told me she loved me on New Year's Eve, so I thought this would be hard on her. But she took it like a trooper.
That's kind of weird.
He agreed.
But why did you break up with her? She was pretty smart, funny, very sexy. Well, she looked sexy.
He grinned.
But you knew it better than I.
She was all that. Ryan agreed. But she didn't really like the amount of time I spent with my family. She said she loved me, but she wasn't ready to love my whole family.
What is she, some kind of psycho?
He teased.
What's not to love?
That's how I feel. She agreed with a smile. But she was pretty reserved. I think we were a little overpowering for her when we were all together. And I quickly noticed that she doesn't like to be teased. And as you know, you can't get through dinner here without being teased 10 times.
Gee, Ryan, did we contribute to your breakup? If he would have told us, we would have laid off the teasing.
Nope, that's not the kind of woman I want. I can't be with someone that I have to be so careful with. But, you know, if she had told me that she wanted to work on being more comfortable around you guys, I would have made some concessions. But she just wanted to maneuver me into spending less time at home. And that was just not going to happen. She said firmly. Connor looked over at Ramon and said,
It's too bad Jamie's straight. She would be perfect for you.
Really? I thought she would be perfect for you. She dryly observed.
Yeah, but I've never gotten any vibes from her. She treats me like an older brother. How about you? Any vibes?
He asked, mostly because he was interested, but partly to protect his $50 bet with Rory. She started to say, but her cheeks were rapidly blushing.
I thought so.
He said slowly.
You two were acting awfully friendly when we went bowling together. So what are you going to do about it?
Well, she did a little something about it last week, but it was nothing huge. She said defensively. She got a little tipsy on her birthday, and she kissed me. We both just acted like it didn't happen.
Again, what are you going to do about it?
Nothing, she said quickly. I have a firm policy not to date good friends, and Jamie's the best friend I have. I couldn't stand to lose her companionship.
You know, Ryan, I'm certainly not the best person to give relationship advice, but maybe you should change that policy.
Why do you say that?
Well, you claim you're ready to find a real girlfriend. Why not get rid of 6 months of work and date someone you already know? You were with Tracy for 4 months before you found out she didn't have some vital requirements. If you tried to make it work with a friend, you can concentrate on the love and sex part instead of having to get to know one another.
That might be a good in theory, but given my record, all I was succeeding in is losing her as a friend as well as a lover.
That's not being fair to yourself.
He admonished her.
You haven't tried to have many steady girlfriends.
That's true, but I just don't think it's wise to even consider Jamie. She's ostensibly straight. She just broke up with her fiancé, and she's my best friend. That's an awful lot to overcome.
But do you find her attractive, don't you?
I'm not
blind, Connor.
She laughed.
So you would try to date her if you weren't friends, right?
I'd be on her like green on grass. She said with a sly grin.
Well, I still think you should consider what I said.
He urged. Give that some thought, Connor. But right now I've got a lot to make up for lost time. She said with a wildly waggling eyebrow. Hi, Ollie, she said happily. It's Ryan.
Hey, gorgeous. A long time no see.
I've been out of circulation for a few months. Do you have any interest in helping me get back in the saddle?
I'll be home by 8.
She replied immediately. Should I bring anything?
Just a hearty appetite.
She purred. The next morning, Jamie was waiting for Ryan at her 8 o'clock class. I was going to ask if you wanted to go get coffee, but I can see him too late. She said as she pointed to the empty 20-ounce cup in her friend's hand.
I can use more.
She said as she shook her head. Are you okay? I know you were planning to speak to Tracy and I was concerned that it might be hard for you.
No. Actually, we had lunch yesterday and we talked it all out.
She admitted she didn't really have an interest in being part of my extended family. She said that she wanted to have a relationship with me, but she wasn't really ready for a big commitment thing. She said she probably didn't want kids either, so my suspicions were correct.
So how did you leave it?
Well, she blushed a little bit. She was more than willing to have a little fling, but for some weird reason it didn't feel right to me.
Really?
She said happily.
Maybe she's getting this serial dating out of her system. Oh, please.
Yeah, it was really weird. Once I decided that I wanted a committed relationship with her, just having sex didn't seem that appealing. It felt like I would have been settling for something inferior.
Wow, Jamie said. Maybe you've really changed about how you feel about sex. Maybe you won't be satisfied with some substance in your encounters.
I think that's a rush to judgment. She admitted with another blush.
Why? Are you already planning for your next victim?
I had a date last night.
She admitted. Jeez, Ryan! You didn't break up with her until noon. How do you find someone to go out in the afternoon?
I didn't really go out. She revealed. I called my friend, Allie, and she, helped me, make up for lost time.
God, I bet Tracy would love to hear that.
She was really okay with breaking up, Jamie. As a matter of fact, I got the impression that she was mainly interested in me to see if she could get me to be faithful. She was hardly broken up about it. It just made me realize that I can't really look at a checklist of what I want in a woman. There just has to be some chemistry there, and I don't think Tracy and I ever had that. We just really wanted different things from our relationship.
I'm sorry if I sound judgmental, Ryan. I think I'm just predicting how I feel if Jack had a date on Sunday.
I understand, Jamie. It's hard not to apply in other situations to your own. But believe me, Tracy didn't cry herself to sleep last night.
And you obviously didn't either,
she said as she gave her mock scowl. Oh, I cried, she teased. I cried for mercy.
Just after 8 a.m., Jamie and Ryan pulled into a parking space in Golden Gate Park. Jamie was riding in the back seat of Connor's big crew cab, playing with a giggling Caitlin. Ryan hopped out and came around to the rear passenger door, and began to busily unstrap the baby from the car seat. When she was released, Jamie held her up while Ryan climbed into the bed of the truck by holding onto the top rail, stepping onto the top of the big tire and throwing a leg over the rail. She picked up one bike at a time, lowering each to the ground to rest against the truck. Then she picked up the lime green baby carrier and did the same. She spent a few minutes attaching the carrier to her bike, after playfully attempting to stick it on Jamie's. When everything was set, they all put on their helmets. Jamie and Ryan laughed for a long while when Caitlin kept trying to see what the other had on their head by looking straight up. She finally satisfied her curiosity by reaching for the helmet repeatedly with her little hands. The baby had just celebrated her 6-month birthday, and she was going to be put to the test. She had been the carrier many times, but the last time she was quite a bit smaller, and Ryan was certain she did not remember the experience. Caitlin was not at all sure she wanted to get into the carrier by herself. She made some very serious baby faces, but finally began to smile as Ryan started to pedal. The wind whipped by her little head, and she giggled from the sensation of the movement and the gentle bouncing of the carrier on the pavement. Jamie stayed behind for a while to make sure the baby was enjoying the experience.
"She's loving it, Ryan,"
she happily said as she came up alongside her companion. She continued this little switch for a long time, a few minutes behind, or next to Caitlin, chatting with the happy infant and laughing at her joyous face. Then a few next minutes to Ryan, excitedly describing the baby's antics. They rode through every available road in the park. After a good hour, they both needed a rest. They left the park and rode a very short distance to a coffee house. Although they had eaten breakfast, they were both hungry, now that it was after 9 a.m. Jamie offered to buy, and she waited in line while Ryan took the baby to the restroom to check her diaper. When they returned, changed and happy, Jamie was waiting for them at a table in front of the window. Since Jamie was left to her own devices, she purchased 2 cranberry scones, a poppy seed muffin, and a big cinnamon roll. 2 very large lattes waited alongside the food. "Jamie, you're finally starting to catch on," Ryan said appreciatively. "You can never order too much." While Jamie ate her scone, Ryan polished off the remaining 3 items. Caitlin sucked on her bottle and served the other patrons from her resting place on Ryan's lap. Ryan looked at Jamie thoughtfully and asked, "How do you feel to be back in the park?"
"It felt okay,"
she replied after she took a minute to think.
"I'm not sure I would feel if it were sitting down like we were then. I don't think I could relax enough to sleep,"
she admitted. "How do you feel about testifying?" she continued. "It's coming up pretty soon."
Jamie was well aware that they were scheduled to testify at the trial of her attacker in 2 weeks. "It's kind of weird for me. I mean, I didn't see him until afterward it was all over, and he was unconscious, thanks to you."
She shivered a bit as she said,
"I'm not nervous about the extra trial or anything, but I don't like to have to talk about the whole thing."
"I know what you mean. It's not my favorite thing to think about either,"
she said slowly. "Does it bother you, Ryan? I mean, I know you had trouble sleeping for a while. Are you okay now?"
She asked gently as she touched Ryan's hand. "I'm mostly fine," she said. "Every once in a while I have a flashback, though. Still scares me a bit,"
she conceded. "Tell me what bothers you."
Jamie coaxed her friend. "I flash back to the helpless feeling that I had when I thought he was going to drag you into the woods. I knew I couldn't put the baby down in case he was working with someone else. It might have been a ruse to steal Caitlin."
She smiled down at the gurgling baby on her lap.
"But I also knew that I couldn't take her with me if I had to run after you. I couldn't risk getting her injured."
She shook her head at the memory.
"It was just the most awful feeling of powerlessness. I knew I could stop that guy in a second, but I couldn't risk it,"
she said as she stared at her hands.
"I don't think I could have lived with myself if he had hurt you, Jamie,"
she said softly. Jamie smiled at her in sympathy. "Sometimes I forget that this whole thing is probably harder on you than on me," she said. "You saw everything and you had to make hard decisions."
She gripped Ryan's hand now.
"If anything had happened, it would not have been your fault, Ryan. You did everything just perfectly. When you are trusted with the care of a child, she has to come first. I would have been very angry with you if you had not secured her safety first. But you know, I'm still impressed by the hurt you put on him. Tell me about your training."
"When I was about 12, I started taking martial arts. Dad was worried about me, justifiably, as it turns out. I ran around all over the city on my skateboard and I had many opportunities to get in trouble. I studied for about 6 years. I was pretty good," she reflected. "I haven't had to use it in a long while, but I did teach kickboxing class in my old gym.
You know, I might feel more confident if I learned some self-defense. What do you think?"
Jamie asked. "I think that anything that empowers a person is a good idea," she replied. "That would help your physical preparedness. But what about your emotional health? Have you considered talking about it to anyone else?"
Ryan asked. "Funny you should ask that," Jamie replied. "I had my first appointment with a therapist on Friday morning."
"To talk about the attack?" Ryan asked.
I guess that is part of it. I just need to talk about Jack and my parents and a bunch of stuff that's been on my mind."
"How did you decide to try this?"
Ryan inquired. "My grandfather actually persuaded me. He didn't like all of the weight loss, and he thought that a therapist could help me be less nervous."
"Was he able to recommend someone to you?"
she asked. Actually, I asked Professor Levy for a referral. I mean, I know she knows people in Berkeley, so I thought it would be easier."
"So, what do you think? Do you like him or her?" Ryan asked.
"Yeah, I like her. Her name is Anna Fleming. She seems pretty cool. She's down on Telegraph by
Andronico's." "I hope she can help you get rid of some of your stress," Ryan said as she patted her hand. Just then, Caitlin let out a yell that drew her attention to the Italian store.
"I think Caitlin has been sitting long enough. Ready to go?"
"Yep, let's go."
As they rode along, Jamie brought her bike alongside Ryan for a little while Caitlin was sound asleep in her carrier. "Have you ever been in therapy, Ryan?"
"Yeah. I've had short-term counseling a couple of times to get me through some rough periods. After my cousin Michael died, I had a really hard time. He and I always had been close, but we got a lot closer during his illness. I tried to go see him every day after school and help him out in any way I could.
I think I believed that if I worked hard enough, and we did everything possible, that we could save him. In retrospect, I think I was re-experiencing the trauma of my mother's death. She looked over at Jamie with her big blue eyes, clouded over with grief. I had a hard time eating or sleeping for a long time. Dad didn't know what to do, but luckily someone from the San Francisco AIDS Foundation referred us to a grief workshop for kids. I went for almost a year. I can't tell you how helpful it was to talk to other kids who had lost someone to AIDS. Most of the others had lost their parents, and some of them had lost both parents.
God, I can't imagine how terrible that would be. I can't imagine how horrible that would be to watch your parents just waste away, Jamie said empathetically. Wasn't it tough to listen to?
Yeah, it was really hard. But some weeks the only peace I got was at the meeting. It was one of the most worthwhile things I've ever participated in.
I'm really glad it was available to you, Jamie said. I hope therapy works for me, but I guess it will take a while to adjust to it.
I'm glad you decided to do it, Jamie. You've had an incredible stressful year, and it just makes sense that you might need someone to help get through.
You've helped me more than I can say, Ryan. You've really been my rock, and I thank God every day that I have your friendship.
I do that, too. Ryan admitted with a grin.
What?
Jamie asked. I thank God for your friendship every day, she said. You're part of my roster now.
Jamie beamed over at her for a moment. She said, best team I've ever been on.
2 weeks later, they emerged from the rather stately entrance to the Superior Court of San Francisco. The entire day had been consumed by the hurry-up-and-wait atmosphere of the trial, and for reasons they could understand, the prosecutors stuck the policewoman in between them to testify, forcing Ryan to hang around for an additional 4 hours to wait for Jamie.
Well, at least we're done with it. Ryan observes as she filled her lungs with cool, fresh, moist air.
I don't know what you're planning on doing for a living, but you should consider becoming an expert witness in whatever it is.
Jamie told her with admiration.
You were just phenomenal.
Thanks, Ryan said, blushing a little. I wrote down a very detailed description of what happened that day, right after we got home. It helped me sort things out a little. I reviewed it a couple of times when I was having problems sleeping. In an odd way, it calmed me down, so the details were pretty well set in my mind.
It sounded like the village idiot compared to you,
Jamie smirked.
The jury must have thought I had brain damage.
I think they understood that it's a little hard to remember details when you're unconscious. Ryan teased. I think you did great.
I guess we just have to hope we've convinced them, she said soberly. I want him put away for a very long time.
Well, we should know within a couple of days. The prosecutor thinks they'll have a verdict by tomorrow or the next day. Do you want to know what the outcome is?
Jamie thought for a moment as she leaned against the large base of a statue near the front steps. Surprisingly, I don't. I don't think they can put him away long enough to suit me, so I think I'd rather assume the best. How about you?
I'm interested, but only so I don't have to worry about him for a while. I see him in my dreams enough without being worried about seeing him on the street. She said as she shudder raced up her spine.
I'm so sorry that you're still bothered by it. She said softly as she leaned up to wrap Ryan in a gentle hug. I hardly think about it anymore, thanks to you.
I traded lifetimes and nightmares for your safety.
Ryan said softly, right into her ear.
Jamie had been seeing a therapist for 3 weeks when she finally had the nerve to bring up her sexuality. Since cost was not an issue, they had decided that twice-a-week sessions were good, at least until Jamie felt some relief. After only 4 sessions, she actually felt significantly better. But she had spent nearly all of the sessions talking about Jack and her distress over her breakup. Now it was time to open up fully. After 7 sessions, she finally broached the subject.
There's something that's bothering me, Anna, she said hesitantly. Tell me, Jamie,
she replied neutrally.
I think I might be gay,
she replied as she stared at the pattern on the rug.
What makes you think so?
Anna asked.
I'm incredibly attracted to my closest friend Ryan, she revealed. I haven't told you the whole story about why Jack and I broke up,
she admitted shyly. After going through the entire story, Anna asked,
have you ever acted out on any of your feelings for Ryan? Sort of. On my birthday, I gave her a kiss on the lips, she replied. How did she react? We both acted like everything was normal, but right after she said she thought we should leave because we were both a little drunk. After a moment, she added, maybe it made her uncomfortable. Did she act any differently towards you after the incident? No, not really. She was pretty much the same. So it must not have bothered her too much, she observed. Do you want to pursue her, Jamie?
She asked.
I really think I do, Anna. But I just feel so overwhelmed by everything that's happened. I'm afraid of what I'll do if she isn't interested. Is there any reason that you feel compelled to do something right now?
Or could you wait a while until you feel more grounded? She queried. I guess I'm not in a rush. She said as though this were the first time she had considered this. She just broke up with someone, and I don't think she wants to get into another relationship right away. You know, it makes me feel better to think I don't have to hurry. You might feel better if you resolve some of your feelings about Jack before you put all of your energies into connecting with another person, Jamie. And I think you would be more clear on what to do about Ryan, and we spent some time really exploring your feelings. So you would recommend that I not tell her how I feel right now? She asked. My recommendation is that you keep your life as simple as possible until you're sleeping better and able to eat. If expressing your feelings to Ryan would cause more stress, I would advise against it for the time being. She replied, Well, given that I feel 100% better already, I guess that's good advice. She replied happily. Ryan was finally able to fulfill her long-standing promise to take Jamie to hear Rory's band play locally. On that Friday evening, Jamie drove her to her Flattery's house at 6 p.m. Everyone was there, and dinner was a boisterous affair, with lots of teasing, boasting for the boys. Rory left at 6:30 to get ready for their performance. At 8 o'clock, they left in several cars to hear the band play at Molly Maguire's, a local pub where they frequently played when town. Jamie was really looking forward to hearing Rory and his bandmates. She didn't know a thing about traditional Irish music, but she assumed they would all love it because Ryan did. There were 5 members in the band. Rory played keyboards and accordion. Terry played tenor and soprano sax. William played the fiddle and the violin, and Mike played percussion, and Dylan played bass. Shortly after they all arrived, the band began their first set. Jamie was charmed by very accomplished musicians. Most of the melodies were light and melodic, although the lyrics to nearly every song were sad or downright tragic. All of the band members sang, but Rory handled most of the lead vocals. He had a rich, mellow tenor, which carried beautifully throughout the small room. Jamie had been with Rory on numerous occasions, but she never would have guessed how much emotion he packed into his music. She was nearly brought to tears on several occasions by the expressiveness of his voice. After playing almost 15 songs, the band took a long break. Rory came over to the table while the other musicians went outside to smoke. Rory sat in the glow of the compliments being sent his way. Jamie was effusive in her praise, and he soaked it all up happily. He asked her which song she enjoyed most. She thought for a long while and finally admitted that she liked the most poignant ones the best. They all laughed at this and asked her which songs had been happy. Together they went through the list, losing the farm, losing the children to war, being forced to marry for money, and having your mate lost at sea. After much discussion, they all agreed that every song had been sad in one way or another. Finally, Connor asked Ryan to get up and sing a happy song for the crowd. Jamie chimed in.
I didn't know you sang in public. Ryan!
Rory replied,
She could make a good living with the music if she wanted to, Jamie. She's probably the most talented of us all.
Ryan blushed a bit at the praise, but she admitted that singing for others was not driving force for her. I like to sing for myself, mostly. She admitted, I don't mind singing in public once in a while, but it's not something that I love enough to do every day.
I would love to hear you, Ryan, Jamie begged. Please?
Okay. You know I can't turn down begging. She grinned. Since the band was still on their break, Brendan agreed to accompany her on the guitar. They discussed what songs to play and finally settled on 2 favorites. You asked for it, Jamie, she said with a smile as she got up. She was wearing a deep red Angora turtleneck and a pair of soft black slacks. Her hair was loose around her shoulders, and she had just a few wispy bangs touching her forehead. Brendan grabbed an acoustic guitar and adjusted his strap. When he was ready, he introduced himself. There was a single spotlight shining on Ryan as Brendan introduced her the most beautiful and talented of the entire O'Flattery clan. She beamed back at him as he began the first chords to the song they had chosen. The spotlight highlighted the mahogany and gold tones in her raven hair. Her cheeks were pink from the warmth of the room, and her eyes sparkled to dance in the bright light. She looked entirely at ease as she sat on a tall stool with the heels of her loafers hooked over a rung. Her posture was upright and poised, but very casual. She looked as though she was singing in front of her very close friends at her home. The song they had chosen was, in fact, rather happy. In her smooth, clear alto, Ryan began to sing. First when I came to the town, they called me Young and Bonnie. Now they've changed my name and call me the Lee Boy's Honey. I'll dye my petticoat red and I'll face them with a yellow. I'll tell the Dyster lads that the Lee Boys I've to follow. Several things impressed Jamie immediately. First, of course, was the sheer beauty of Ryan's voice. The music seemed to flow for her effortlessly. She almost seemed to be talking rather than singing. The second thing was the girlish smile and the body language that Ryan had appropriated to sing the song. This was clearly a song about a young heterosexual girl, and
Rye had the ability to adopt the demeanor to sell the lyrics. The final impressive element was Ryan's ability to just have fun with this. She even shot Jamie a cute little smile when she sang the next line. It's over the hill and dale, over the dykes and ditches. Say, will I like the lad that wear the moleskin breeches? The black horse draws the cart, and she's as proud as any. Say, will I like the lad that drives him on so canny? Feather beds are fine, painted rooms are bonny, but I will leave them all to jog away with Johnny. Oh, for Saturday night, it's I that'll see my dearie. He'll come whistling in when I'm tired and weary. First when I came to the town, they called me proud and saucy. Now they've changed my name, call me the Lee Boy's Lassie. Jamie was easily able to believe that Ryan could be the Lee Boy's Lassie, but for a genetic difference, she could easily be that girl that boys fought over. She could be sitting on her house on a Saturday night waiting for Johnny. Jamie was never so glad that homosexuality existed. It gave her a fighting chance to one day know the love of this woman. Connor and Rory sat behind Jamie, casually watching both their sister and her friend. Connor had told Rory of his conversation with Ryan. They had decided to determine if there was any mutual interest on Jamie's part. Even though Connor doubted that he would win the bet, he offered to double it, but Rory held firm. At the end of the song, they both looked at the expression on Jamie's face. It was a mixture of love and desire, with a good measure of pure worship thrown in. Rory smiled sweetly at Connor as he held out his hand. Connor reached into his wallet, pulling out 2 20s and a 10, and he slapped it onto the table. Later that night, Ryan was walking Fernell to the car. Jamie lavished praise upon Ryan for both her singing and voice and her stage presence. After discussing the band and the various members for a long while, she could tell that Ryan was beat, so she bid her good night. As Jamie got into a car, Ryan asked, "What are you doing tomorrow?"
Nothing, why?
It's St. Patrick's Day, lassie, she announced in a hilting Irish accent.
Okay, what are you doing?
I'm the barmaid at the Dublin, of course.
Since when do you work at a bar?
I do it every St. Patrick's Day, she explained in a normal voice. If you're free, come over and have a pint. Connor, some of the cousins will be there to harass me, of course, so it should be fun.
Is that place right on the 24th?
Yeah, but if you come, be prepared for a huge crowd. It's quite a zoo.
Jamie didn't want to be at the bar alone, so she waited until 8 to head over. She had to park so far away from the bar that she wound up a block past Ryan's house. My God, it's never been this congested over here, she marveled. Guess everyone is out celebrating St. Patrick's Day.
Her suspicions were confirmed when she tried to wedge into the bar. The rowdy patrons packed in so tight, she knew they were violating several city ordinances, but she assumed the local police turned a blind eye on St. Patty's Day. It took a great deal of patience and a few well-placed elbows, but she finally made her way over to the large wooden bar. She looked out and found the crowd that posited her right next to a happy little group that featured Brendan, Connor, Niall, Kieran, and Frank.
Jamie!
They all cried nearly as one. The over-exuberant tone to their call indicated the advanced level of their inebriation, but she gamely allowed each of them to offer a hug and didn't even complain about Connor's rather sloppy kiss on her cheek.
How long have you boys been here? She shouted over the din.
We walked Ryan over after 5, Brian supplied. What time is it now?
Almost 9!
She yelled in reply.
No wonder I can't feel my feet.
He marveled at his own little Irish accent. Just then, Jamie spotted her favorite barmaid. Ryan looked extremely attractive this evening. Not that that was a newsflash. But there was something about her that looked very different. It took Jamie a moment to realize that Ryan looked straight. It wasn't just that her hair was held back with a braided green and white ribbon. It wasn't that she was dressed in a form-fitting emerald green knit vest, sans blouse. It wasn't even the fact that she wore a touch of makeup. No. It was the fact that she was acting straight, and that most decidedly, to Jamie's keen eye, was a first. Ryan spotted her and gave her a demure little wave, along with a toss of her jet-black hair. Jamie grinned and shook her head at the display, but when Ryan approached the man to her left, she nearly fell from the stool that Brian insisted she occupy.
Evening, darling,
she announced in a rather dramatic Irish thick accent, as she graced him with her most winning smile and a girlish batting of her eyes.
How can I help you?
The tongue-tied man seemed as flabbergasted by the raven-haired beauty as Jamie was, but he managed to choke up.
Are you new around here?
Aye,
she cried.
Just over from the Killala in Mayo,
she said with such joy that it appeared she expected the man to be relative from the old sod, or at least a fellow Killalian.
Welcome to America,
he said dreamily.
Can I have a pint of Guinness and your phone number?
Ah, go on with you,
she cried.
Your lads are all so friendly. I've had more good wishes and offers to show me around than I can count. Such a friendly place,
she said as she turned to draw pints. Jamie noticed that her friend bent over just enough to show her best assets as she drew his down, smiling that unnerving smile the entire time. She placed a pint in front of him and said coyly,
I'm not sure how long I'll be staying, love. It costs a pretty pants to stay in your lovely city. But if I can afford it, maybe you can come around sometime, eh?
He nodded as if in trance, pulling out a five for the $3 pint, and thanking Ryan profusely as he walked back to his mate, happy to leave the gorgeous woman a 66% tip. Ryan dashed to the register and rang up the $3, sticking two singles in her bulging back pocket. She trotted back and signaled to Jamie,
Meet me at the other end of the bar.
It was a tough trip as she made the short distance, not too much after her grinning friend. Ryan dug into his training pocket and handed the gob of slightly damp bibs to her friend.
Keep my tips, will ya?
She said right into Jamie's ear in order to be heard.
It doesn't look right to look like I'm doing too well. Jeez, Ryan,
she cried.
How did you make all of this?
An Irish accent, a tight sweater, and a wonder bra. She laughed.
How else?
So you put on this act to just make money? She asked, slightly incredulous.
Mighty!
She agreed as she pinched Jamie's cheeks and trotted back to her post. By the time Jamie made it back to Connor, had procured a perfectly poor pint of Guinness for her as well, and another round for his drinking buddies. She'd never seen any of the boys in their cups, and never in fact seen them drink, all except for a bowling night. But she had to admit that they were a fun group of drunks. Connor especially was twice as charming, if a little sloppy. He tossed an arm around Jamie and held onto her for the duration of the evening. But after a while it became clear that he did so to maintain his balance as much as to show his affection. The boys had been teasing and taunting each other mercilessly all night, and Jamie found herself on the end of a few pointed barbs herself, but she didn't mind it a bit. In fact, it made her feel like one of the group. She did best to give as good as she got. She admitted herself to two pints, but that was more than enough to give her a very pleasant buzz. Her mind reeled at the thought of how the boys must be feeling since she had personally seen them each have three in the 2 hours she had been occupied on her stool. When one patron got a little too enamored of Ryan, she watched all the boys give him a long, stern look, but they didn't make any obvious move to deter him. Ryan took his wandering hands in stride, stepping quickly out of the way when he tried to grab a handful of her shapely butt.
I'm amazed you didn't flatten him,
Jamie chuckled into Connor's ear.
Ah, you can't blame them, Jamie,
he explained rather expansively.
She looks like she wants them to grab her. She flirts with them constantly. Hell, I'm half tempted to make a play for her.
He laughed at his own joke and even passed out in hysterics when he caught the look on Jamie's stunned face.
I'm kidding, Jamie.
He howled. She slapped him lightly on the side and rolled her eyes in exasperation at his antics. He leaned over and he pulled her tightly against his side.
How about you?
He purred rather seductively. Her mouth grew bone dry as she stammered,
Me what?
Do you have an interest in my baby sister?
He asked in the same seductive growl.
Why would I have an interest?
She started weakly.
I asked first.
He reminded her.
Come on now. You can tell Uncle Connor.
He crooned.
I promise I won't tell.
I she muttered, annoyed at her own inarticulateness.
Uh-huh.
He murmured.
Just as I thought.
Her rapidly blushing face and weakened knees caused him to pat her shoulder comfortably and hold on a bit tighter.
There, there.
He assured her.
You could do worse than fall for my sister, you know. And personally, I think she would be fool to let you get away.
He tilted his dark head down and rested it against Jamie's for a moment.
You're quite a woman, Jamie.
She closed eyes tightly and accepted the truth of his statement, but a relatively soft object hurled at her head at close range broke the moment. Turning faster than her slightly blurry eyes appreciated, she whirled around to find a grinning Ryan tossing peanuts at her head from a dish in the bar.
Don't encourage him, Jamie, she warned. He'll follow me home like a lost puppy.
No problem, she replied with a grin of her own. I've always wanted a puppy.
She said affectionately as she teasingly petted Connor's dark head.
Well, don't blame me if he starts humping your leg. Well, don't blame me if he starts humping your leg,
she warned, accent firmly in place as she dashed down the bar to pour another pint. To be continued. Well, that concludes episode number 176 of XNU, and that is chapter 14 of I Found My Heart in San Francisco by Susan Mayer. I hope everyone is enjoying the series. It's quite a long one, obviously, as you can see, and I hope everyone is starting to read book two and book three. Book three is quite a scorcher, but I highly doubt I'll be able to finish the entire series, because the book series actually goes, I think, to something like 14 or 15 books, which would take me from here until the next millennium to read through. So,
No, that's not going to happen. If anyone has any suggestions for future stories, if someone can research any Xena stories where I might be able to get hold of the author and do some Xena stories, ergo Xena and Ubers, I'd greatly appreciate it. And if you have any suggestions for books or movie recommendations, anything like that, send them in to xena.uber@gmail.com. So until the next episode, everyone, take care, enjoy life and love. Bye-bye. Whoa!